But when you realise how everything's working, that's when you can go, hang on, I get a choice. I don't have to do what the machine's doing. It's just giving me a suggestion. That's it.
Welcome to episode 88 of Sharp Podcast, the personal growth podcast from SON Development, where we help you get better at the things you have to do so you can spend more time on the things you want to do. Right, now I've really been looking forward to releasing this episode because I know that you are going to love it. In our working life, right, we might have to talk to people. I mean, that's inevitable, isn't it? And the day-to-day stuff that we have to do, those conversations are fairly easy to do. You know, the stakes are quite low. But when it comes to the bigger stuff, like doing presentations or networking, or maybe having to sell your products or services, or even worse, having to make a video, that feels different, doesn't it? Many people struggle with this, and there are good reasons why. In this episode, we're going to learn those reasons and the solutions. This is a fantastic conversation with Helen Walker. Helen helps people present, sell products and services, even make videos. And she's learned over years of experience as a sales coach why we sometimes find these things difficult and how to make it easier. So if you ever find yourself having to do presentations, go to networking, or just talk with confidence about what you do, this episode is definitely for you. By the end of it, not only will you know how to transform your mindset, but you will be fully inspired by Helen's unique approach to developing your confidence by embracing your fears and then turning them into your allies. So, get ready to shift your perspective, ignite your excitement, and channel your inner Miley Cyrus as we talk to the remarkable Helen Walker. So here I am in the studio, and I am extremely excited to have Helen Walker at the other end of the phone line. At the other end of the computer. Helen, are you there? I hope she's there.
I'm there. I'm here.
Fantastic. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm good, thanks. I'm really excited about this.
Oh, me too. Yeah, I am properly excited. And tell my listener that off screen I said that I'm actually quite nervous. So, don't tell Helen. So, okay, Helen, I always open with three questions. The first questions are, tell us who you are, tell us where you are, and tell us what colour socks you've got on.
Oh, I like this. This is like blind date, isn't it? Number one, where are you from? What were the questions? Who am I? I'm Helen Walker. Well, that was the question, wasn't it? I forgot already.
Yeah.
I'm Helen Walker, and what colour socks have I got on? I've got black socks with pink toes.
Pink toes.
I've missed a question out, haven't I?
Where are you?
You probably will not guess this from my accent. I'm in Surrey.
Okay.
I know I sound very posh. I'm not from Surrey. I'm from Doncaster. But I met my partner and he lives in Surrey, so we live here now.
Yeah, there isn't like a sort of a plumbing mouth accent going on here. That's broad Surrey you've got going on there, isn't it?
I stick out like a sore thumb down here.
Oh, fantastic. Love it. Don't fit in. That's...
Stand out.
Stand out, yeah. So, Helen, just... For those people who don't know you, and if they don't, they bloody should, tell us a little bit about kind of your business, what you do, what do you do?
So I run a coaching business called Helen Walker Coaching, very unique name. And essentially what I do is help other business owners create what I call scroll-stopping videos so that they can stand out in their niche and basically turn their followers into paying clients. But a lot of my work is mindset and confidence. Because to show up on camera and, you know, do things like this and be more visible, it does take an element of either just being completely daft, like I am, or just really working on building your confidence. So a lot of what I do with my clients is mindset stuff, which I am fascinated by.
Well, and the subject that we agreed we could talk about, because I think our listeners will be fascinated by it. Like you, I do think there's a fine line between being confident talking to people and being slightly unhinged. And
I'm not sure which side of the fence I sit on.
Well, same here sometimes. You have to ask some of my audience. But I think you're right. I do think that for those of us that aren't
I'm not calling you weird, I'm calling myself weird. For those of us that aren't weird enough to actually enjoy standing up and talking in front of people, it does take a bit of work and a bit of mindset. And, you know, it's not something that's easy. But what do you mean by mindset and confidence, first of all? What does that mean to you?
Oh, that's a good question. For me, mindset is how you think, it's how you show up, it's the thoughts that run through your head. The reason I'm so fascinated by this term mindset is I'm just really intrigued why we don't do the things that we know are going to make our life easier, better, make us more money, make us feel fulfilled. Because I used to be one of those people. You know, now people, when I say to people, when I tell them my story and my backstory, I was like a church mouse. I wouldn't say boo to a goose. And they go, no way. And I'm like, yeah. And it just fascinates me, when I look back, the amount of opportunities that I must have missed out on because I didn't believe in myself. And I had this like moment of why am I doing this? Why am I living half a life? And that's what really set me on a journey of finding out about this mindset stuff. I had, when I was young, not that long ago, we're talking like 15 years ago, I had really bad depression. Like, can't get out of bed, miserable, not living life, depression. And, the doctors gave me medication. That was great. You know, it got me to a bit of an even keel. But I was like, I don't want to just survive. I want to thrive. I want to really enjoy life. So that was really the trigger of me starting to get into neuroscience and, you know, the real nitty gritty of like why we think the way we do. And I always say I cured myself of depression. You know, people would never think that I suffered with like really bad depression. I was a completely different person. And what cured me, if you like, in inverted commas, was finding out about mindset and how my mind works and why it's actually designed to work against me. And when you, it's almost like when you reach a certain age, you should be given this rule book on how your mind works. Because I think the world would be a better place if we all understood why we hold ourselves back.
I mean, it sounds like a really interesting story, and probably your backstory could be a whole other episode in itself. But what are sort of one or two of the things you discovered along the way, these rules that people can unlock and unpick?
I suppose the fundamental is that we've got this machine in our heads that, two machines. One that is you, that wants to do all the things, that apply for the job, ask the person out on a date, do the talk in front of however many people. But then we've also got this other machine that's our survival instinct, the thing that's going to keep us safe. And those two things, those two machines really conflict. So one wants to keep you small and you want to go out and grab life. But unfortunately, the machine that keeps you safe and keeps you surviving and reproducing and, you know, it just, that keeps you small. And that's the most powerful machine in your head. And once you realize this, that you're always going to be battling against a machine that is stronger than you, life becomes easier. Because when you're presented with an opportunity, let's take the, you know, speaking on stage in front of people. If you're presented with that opportunity, if you know that your mind is instinctively going to go, do not do that, because your mind doesn't know the difference between an emotional threat of you may be embarrassed, you may fluff your words, you may faint on stage, with you're going to die. It thinks it's the same thing. So this is why sometimes you get nervous and you think, this is all out of proportion. Why am I so scared? Why, you know, this story that's going through my head, this is ridiculous. And you're having that conversation because you're having the conversation with the two machines in your head that guide you. So when I realised actually it was this machine and also this kind of computer where loads of beliefs about myself and the world and how it works had gone into this computer, but it had gone in as absolute facts. So I'm now, you know, battling with these two machines. One wants me to keep small. That's more powerful than me. But then I've got this data bank of memories and experiences that all make me feel like not worthy. So I've got to battle with all of this stuff. Now, if I didn't know that was there for a long time, I didn't, hence the depression. You believe that story. You believe that you're not good enough. You believe that you can't do it. And this machine that's trying to keep you protected and alive is more powerful than you. So you just give into it and you just go, well, that's me. This is my lot. But when you realise how everything's working, that's when you can go, hang on, I get a choice. I don't have to do what the machine's doing. It's just giving me a suggestion. Yeah. That's it.
We are the stories that we tell ourselves, aren't we? And the power of those stories is so significant that, as you said, that they can move from being a story to being a fact. And when they get locked in as facts, they become pretty powerful to undo, don't they? Until you suddenly go, hang on a minute, that's not a fact, that's a story.
Yeah, a lot of what we tell ourselves, most of what we tell ourselves are stories. They're not necessarily facts. But to make things worse, a lot of what's in there, the stories, are not even our stories.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're stories that other people have given us, and not in a bad way. So I always tell this story about my dad. So my dad is a maths genius. Like, it's like Carol Vorderman. You give him any numbers to add up and he'll just do it in his head. He can remember phone number, everything. Me, on the other hand, that's not where my skills lie. Like, I need a calculator, I need some paper and a pen. And when I was about 7, maybe 8, my dad went in for parents' evening. So my dad loves the bones of me. Me and my dad best mates. Like, so this has not come from a bad place at all. My dad went into school and I wasn't to the standard of my dad's maths genius level. I was of an average 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you know, I think she should be further along with the maths. I think she should be more fluent with the times tables. Can you give us some extra maths homework? So the teacher was like, yeah, that's fine. So next day, got to the end of the day. Looking back with hindsight, I can do this now because my brain is fully formed. But at 7 years old, my brain is in its infancy. It hasn't even, you know, parts of my brain haven't even come online yet. So looking back with hindsight, I think what happened was the teacher had forgotten to give me this book, pottering around, tidying up. She sees this maths book that she hasn't given me and she goes, oh, I need to give her this book. So she picks up the book and she shouts across the classroom, Helen Walker. So everybody in the class turns round to see why Helen Walker's name's been called out. You need to take this book home because you need to do some extra maths homework. I can remember that day as vividly as it was yesterday. Now, what happened was all the kids started sniggering. And there was one kid in particular, we'll call him Thomas, just in case he's listening. He was like the ringleader at school. Everybody wanted to be his friends. All the girls really liked him. He laughed the most. So, of course, tribe mentality, if we have at that age, everybody else started laughing and joining in. So, at that age, all I see is I am being rejected from what is now the most important group of people in my life, my friends at that age.
Yeah.
And I didn't think, you know, because I couldn't do the mental gymnastics of, right, my dad's obviously just gone in, he's got massive expectations, he's got a really strong value about, you know, numbers mean success. I couldn't do all of that. All I could do was go, oh my God, I'm not as good as everybody else. Everybody else is better than me because no one else has got this maths book. It's just me. I'm the idiot. I need to work much harder than everybody else. So that belief wasn't even my belief. It was an experience that happened that got programmed into my computer that I'm not as good as everybody else. And it still lives with me till this day. Some of that stuff we can't get rid of. We've got to learn to manage it. That is hardwired into my system now. So every time I do a video, do a live, do a podcast interview, speak on a stage, launch a new product, anything, meet new people, that belief will shoot up into my mind because that survival instinct is the most strongest part of my brain and go, do you really think you should do this? Because you're not as good as everybody else. And have you prepped enough? And, you know, have you done your research? And all this, put all this doubt into my mind. And I have to go, right, is this true? Is that a true story? No, it's not a true story. Right, what am I going to do? Am I going to listen to it and believe it and follow it? Or am I going to take another path? Am I going to do the thing I want to do? So they're not even our stories half the time.
but they're powerful, aren't they? And that's the challenge. It's knowing, and it's almost a bit like, you know, peeking behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. It's actually quite easy to undo once you know the trick, but it's knowing that this fiction that's in your head, that is either put there by someone else or been put there by an experience you've had, tells you the story. You continue to reinforce that, and of course then we get confirmation bias. So every time something goes wrong in the next few years, that adds in to say, yeah, you see, you're crap at talking to people, you shouldn't ever do it, and all that kind of stuff. And it's powerful stuff. I didn't realize we were actually going to have a scientist on. I feel quite inferior now, and you know, like imposter syndrome, but I'll try and keep up. Put it down to brass tacks then. So thinking about the sorts of things that people do on a day-to-day basis. I mean, our listener base is probably a mixture of entrepreneurs, people that work for themselves, maybe middle managers, people that are looking for some sort of self-development, but maybe their organization's not providing it. But generally, our listeners are people that want to get better at stuff. The strapline of the podcast is that we help people get better at the things they have to do so they can spend more time doing the stuff they want to do. So for the kind of people that want to get better and want to develop these things, so some of our listeners go to networking events, or they go to a conference or a talk, or they go where there's lots of other people. So, you know, rocking up and just talking to strangers, that's quite a tricky thing to do. What can I do about my stories and my system that can make life a bit easier for me?
So the first, and this is not a, it's not a quick fix. Everybody wants to, you know, a tip that I can implement right now and it's going to change my life. So all this.
Why
stuff
not? That's what you told me you were going to give me.
I'd be a very rich woman if I could. You know, because what we're trying to do is undo years of conditioning, and I think the first thing is to acknowledge, you know, patience. It's going to take a little bit of time and practice. It doesn't have to take forever. But first of all, we have got to pull back the curtain and go, what stories am I telling myself? And I think first we've got to get clear on what it is we want. So we want to go to a networking event and we want to speak really confident and, you know, we want to be interesting and we want to work around the room and talk to everybody and, you know, not feel, you know, have that voice going on in our heads about, you know, we're not good enough and et cetera, et cetera. So then we've got to get clear on what it is we want and be honest with what you want. So I want to go to a networking event and I want to walk away with 3 leads. You know, just be honest with yourself of what you want out of that that thing. And then get a sheet of paper. This is before you go to the networking event. And go, okay, what is it I'm worried about? You know, oh, I'm worried that I'm going to say the wrong thing, or people are not going to like me, or I'm not going to know anybody, or everyone's going to be in a clique, or whatever. And then you've got to turn into a detective. So you go, okay, well, why does that worry me? You know, what's happened in the past to make me worried about that? I've had a similar experience like that. And then it's pulling the facts from the fiction. So it might be that you went to a networking event and you made a complete fool like yourself, or you said the wrong thing, or you fell over or spilt a cup of tea over somebody, which I did do once. And, you know, people got angry or whatever. And then go, yeah, but does that make me a bad person? Does that make me stupid? Does that make me not an expert? Or whatever you're telling yourself. And often when you do that, 98% of what you tell yourself is not even true anyway. So if you can't find any evidence, and I mean proper evidence, not, oh, I just feel like that, you know, evidence to support that is a fact, you can kind of get rid of it. You can kind of go, you know, and this, it's easier said than done. This takes practice, but you've got to keep reminding yourself, this is a lie. So, you know, every time I go to a networking event and I am about to talk to people, that old belief of, yeah, but you're not good enough, and everyone turns around and laughs at you, that pops up. And I've got to go, well, is that true? Or is it just some faulty wiring? Some faulty wiring, right, okay. So then it leads you on to the next step of, yet another sheet of paper, and I call this the blank sheet of paper exercise. So how do I want to show up at this event? What is it I want to do? Well, I want to walk in the room and start visualizing yourself walking in the room. So you walk in the room, people naturally turn around to look at you because somebody new's walked in. Right, what story do you want to be telling yourself at that point? Right, they're just looking because they're curious who's walked through the door. Right, what's the next thing that's going to happen? You're going to go get yourself a cup of tea and walk yourself through these steps.
Yeah.
Somebody just starts talking to you. What would you say? Nobody starts talking to you, but you can see a group of people all deep in conversation and you think, right, I'm going to go and talk to those people. So you've got to think, what stories am I telling myself? Right, they're not true anymore. This is the new story I'm going to tell myself. You might be telling yourself that you're boring, nobody's interested, you are terrible with small talk. So the new story is, actually, people are, you know, not everybody's going to be interested in what I've got to say, because you've got to be honest with yourself. You can't go, everyone's going to be really interested and I'm going to be best thing ever and I'm going to get loads of leads, da-da. You know, the reality is not everybody will like me. You know, the reality is I'll go to a networking event and I'll get talking to somebody and go, oh my God, they're boring the pants off me. That's just how life is. So if it happens to you and you can tell somebody's bored, no bother. You're just not, you're not designed for each other. That's fine. Go and find somebody who is, because there'll be loads there that are. So walk yourself through each scenario and have some questions lined up, because people say, oh, I find it really hard to talk to people when I don't know them. What do you talk about? And I'll say, well, anything, because you don't know this person. So you could literally ask them, you could talk to them for the next 5 hours and still have questions. And at networking events, I think people, not just networking events, but events in general, things in general, I think people go with this idea that I've got to demonstrate that I'm clever and I'm an expert and I'm good at what I do. And actually, nobody really cares. We just like people. We like people who are like us. Mm-hmm. So I tend to talk about, you know, where'd you go on holiday? Have you got kids? Where'd you live? What car do you drive? How'd you get here? Bus? All of the normal stuff that just makes you human. Oh, I love that top. Where's that from? Oh, it's from Reese. Oh, I love Reese. This is how you're going to get chatting to people. And if your aim is to get a new contact for work or a new contract or a lead or whatever, that's how you're going to get it, is by being you and developing relationships, rather than going in and thinking, I've got to impress everybody.
Yeah.
Because you haven't at all.
You've highlighted a couple of things there which are really interesting. And one of the things I think is, you said that, you know, well, not everyone's going to like me. But maybe the story that 90% of people aren't going to like me is untrue. Maybe the reality is maybe 10-20% of people won't like me, but the majority will. And the one thing I learned from my old dad is exactly what you said. You know, people will find you interesting if you're interested in them, and if you ask them questions about their world and find out about them. And one of the things I discovered in the early days of networking was actually turned out to be quite simple but quite effective. Just walking up to people and say, I'm really sorry, but I'm crap at networking and I don't know what to do. Can you tell me what you do?
Honesty is the best policy.
Yeah.
And it's a brilliant icebreaker, because 90% of people at the event will hate networking. You know, yeah. they'll not, you see it all the time. I'm always that person who ends up going and dragging the person who's in the corner to come and, you know, to come and talk to us, because I can see it on their face. They're like, oh my, the fear of, I've just got to go and join her. It's like going back to school again of, I didn't get picked for PE. And it's those stories that we're haunted by. You know, we didn't make the netball team, or the bloke at school dumped us. And all those stories are the reason subconsciously why we don't, you know, join in these conversations. Because actually, if, like you say, if you went up to a group of people and said, God, I hate networking, I get really nervous, can I come and talk to you? They go, of course you can. Because people love to feel like they're helping. Mm. So if you were honest and said that, they would be overjoyed for you to go and join their group. And if they're not, then they're probably not people you want to talk to anyway.
The other thing you've talked about there, which I also find interesting, is thinking about your aims. So if you go into a networking event, my aim is to sell my business and to sell my services, you're going to fail because that just ain't going to happen. But if your aim is to build genuine connections with people who at some point along the line, you can help them, they can help you, but there's a connection there that you may well be able to help each other out. For me, having that aim not only is easier to do, but also it's the same as what everyone else wants. People don't want you coming up and transmitting your product or your services and handing over a business card and all that crap.
No, and because I think when I say selling, I don't just mean you've got a business and you're selling a product or a service. You know, you work somewhere or, you know, you want them to come work with you or whatever. I think this idea of selling, you know, this idea that, well, when I think about selling, the word selling, it reminds me of a used car salesman from the 80s. Yep. That are just like, buy, buy, buy. And they don't care whether you want a car or not. They're just making you buy. And those days, you know, there's still people around. Of course there is. But if you want to sell, you don't need to sell anymore. What you need to do is make friends. Build relationships. That's why you go to networking events. So yeah, get clear on what you want to, you know, why you're going to these networking events. Otherwise, you'll just flutter around and achieve nothing. But really, as you say, your primary aim is, I just want to build relationships with people, because you never know where that relationship can go and who they can introduce you to. Sometimes it'll lead to something, sometimes it won't. Sometimes it might just lead to a friendship. But if you go with the premise of, I'm just going to make friends, no matter whether you work for somebody, you work for yourself, it will pay you back tenfold.
Sorry to interrupt your listening, but I just wanted to jump in with a quick message. If you've listened to Sharp Podcast for a few years, you might be wondering why we've been mentioning SON Development and what that's all about. Are they a sponsor? Is it a house building company? Well, no. You see, we've been making Sharp Podcasts since 2017, and it's always been our aim to give you free resource that helps you get better at the things that matter to you, and we're not planning to change that. But SON Development is the training company that I founded in 2021 to help organisations, teams and individuals improve performance and make a real difference to their working lives. We run workshops, we do consultation, and we provide digital resource about leadership, coaching, sales, customer service, planning and prioritisation, and loads more stuff. So if you're a business or a team leader and you're frustrated that your training isn't making a real difference, give us a shout. You can find out more about what we do at sondevelopment.com, and of course there's a link in the show notes. But if you prefer to get your development free of charge with Sharp Podcast, would you do us a favour and just make a quick note now to share this episode, or any that you really like, with your friends, family, colleagues, anyone who you think it could help. We'd really appreciate it. End of interruption. Back to the episode.
Okay, so that's sort of networking and maybe a bit more of a sort of a two-way environment. Thinking about a situation that our listeners might be in where it's a bit more transmit. It's a bit more about I'm talking about myself or talking about a message. Maybe they're doing a presentation or they're recording a video of themselves for online. I don't know if you have any views on making videos. again, what sorts of useful things can people do to start to pivot and shift their mindset when they've got to do that kind of stuff?
So I do make videos. I make quite a lot of videos. And I do kind of edited style videos and live videos. Mm. Now, people, again, do not believe me when I say I used to be terrified at the idea of doing any sort of video. As soon as you would put a camera in my face, I would freeze. How I got over that fear is how I got over depression. The same example as I've just kind of given. It's about going, what stories are you telling yourself? Because the thing that stops us in every single scenario is that voice in our head. We are our worst critic. We say things to ourselves we would never say to a friend. So when I did this exercise, because I knew, you know, got my own business, I knew I needed to be more visible. I needed to do things like this, podcasts. I needed to, you know, be a guest expert in somebody's group. I needed to do PR and, you know, loads of stuff, videos. But I was terrified to the point where, you know, I'd rather pull my own toenails out than do a video. And I had this fear for 2 years, more than 2 years. And I knew that if I wanted to grow a business, I had to overcome this fear. So I did the same exercise, you know, this blank sheet of paper. And I was like, what am I telling myself? And everything was about me. It was, what if I don't appear an expert? What if I fluff my words? What if people don't like me? What if, you know, all this stuff, everything was all centered on me. And what I tell my clients, because every client I work with is, you know, scared to do videos. So we've got to overcome that fear to start with. And this applies to presentations and being more visible, speaking at work. I call it the spotlight exercise. So what I was doing when I was scared and putting it off is I was making it all about me. So I'm scared, I'm worried I'm going to embarrass myself. And I'd say to my clients, right, turn the spotlight away from you, because this is not about you. You're just the vehicle for the message, right? It's not, we've got to drop this ego. It's nothing to do with you. We've got to put the spotlight onto our audience and go, what do they need? So, you know, it's easy to give an example if you're a business owner, but it applies to, you know, if you don't work in a business as well. But if I think about my ideal clients, they're sat there terrified to do video, but this is going to be the vehicle that's going to unlock their business growth. They're going to, you know, have more clients seeing them, more inquiries, make more sales, which also means that they'll have more money, probably more time with the kids because they won't be stressed. And probably won't snap at the other halves as much because they won't be stressed out at work. They won't be working weekends. They'll go on nice holidays, upgrade the car, you know, not freak out about money because they'll have money. So that's the story I've got to tell myself is, if I don't do my videos and I don't do the lives and I don't talk about my offers and I don't promote my business, then them poor souls are going to be sat there with that problem. So it's my duty to go, do you know what? I could help you. And that's all selling is. People get freaked out. I don't want to sell. Selling is going, I know you ideal client over there's got a problem. I could help you with that. So I think I love selling because I'm like, I could make your life better. I could give you more time back with your kids. I could make you earn more money. Like, why wouldn't you tell people that message? Now, it's, you know, I know why, because, you know, I had the same reason, because we make it about us. And, oh, what if people don't buy? And what if they say no? And what if they do say yes? And then they work with me and, no, it's rubbish. And that story goes through our head. Half of it's not true anyway. Some of it might be, but it might not come true. But we've got to think about our ideal client or, you know, the person who we're helping. If you're doing a presentation at work, who's benefiting? Why do you need to do this presentation? You know, how is their life going to be easier, better, more lucrative, whatever? So I always just now, you know, I'm still going to get nerves. That's not going to take my nerves away. And that's something else to accept, is that because we've got this inbuilt survival system that is activated, you know, it's the most powerful part of your brain. It's going to take over instant, you know, in an instant, because he hasn't got time to think about, you know, should it make you jump out of the way of that moving car? It just makes you move. So we've always got to remember that it's just fear is just inbuilt into us. And it's really just a sign to go, hang on a minute. You know, you're going to do a presentation. Have you got your slides ready? Have you practiced? Have you done a walkthrough? You know, have you done whatever you need to do for prep? Yeah, I have. Right. Okay. We can turn that warning sign off. But the thing is, people are so tuned into that warning sign, that's all they listen to, and they never turn it off, and they just live in this constant state of fear, which makes it harder to do anything.
It's really interesting, actually, that there's those two parallels between those two things. So in the networking scenario, going in and being authentic and genuine about wanting to make connections with people, it's the same with making videos, it's the same with presentations, genuinely caring about your audience. We do so. Part of what what I do at our company is training consultancy. And some of that is about training trainers. And what I always find very interesting is often in the world of training, what happens is you get someone that's really good at the job, and then someone in the business says they're so good, they should train other people. They don't teach them how to do training. What they do is they say, take that knowledge you've got in your head and go and give it to other people. You're now a trainer. And when I spend time with these people, it's remarkable how many people who are trainers that haven't done any kind of qualification or any kind of background, that no one's actually taught them how to do training. And the one thing that I say to my clients is, when you're running a session, you have to be in the delegate's world and you have to understand what problem you are solving for them. If you're really clear about what problem you're solving for them, the session's going to go really well because they see that you're genuine. They see that you care about their world. You've got to do a bit of work behind the scenes. You've got to do a bit of research. You've got to go to the shops that they work in or the environment and find out what their challenges are. But if you can bring solutions to their problems, you'll have them, you know, proverbially eaten out your hand. But if you go in there thinking, I've got to transmit this idea, I've got to transmit this knowledge to you, it's going to be tough. Yeah. And you'll probably fail. So, okay, so we've done networking, we've done sort of presentation, video, that kind of stuff. In sort of broader general getting about in the world, what other tips, ideas, thoughts have you got about how people can shift their mindset, their confidence in themselves, how they feel about that kind of stuff?
Well, it's the same thing again. I don't like to overcomplicate things. And when I find something that works, I'll stick with it. But it is, you know, the thing that stops you is the story that you tell yourself. And the trick to unlock, you know, this life where you see these people who don't seem to care, do they? And they just go after what they want. And, you know, they don't worry about what people think. Is because they've changed that story in their head. I mean, some people have the luxury of, you know, they don't have so much rubbish stored on their computer, if you like. You know, all these beliefs might not have such a powerful story that holds them back. But we've got to start searching for new evidence that we are good enough and we can do the things. And, you know, really the only way, I wish there was a magic pill I could give somebody to say, take this or do this thing, and then you'll just be super confident in everything. But the thing is to, you know, always have in the back of your mind of almost like a plan of when fear strikes, you know, the plan is to do the thing I'm scared of. You know, so somebody asks you to speak on a stage and you're terrified, you say yes. Even if it goes horrendously wrong, you say yes. You know, someone says, would you like to go for this promotion at work? The answer is always yes. You know, the things I used to say no to, but inside I'm like, I really want to say yes. But acknowledging that that voice, that fear is always going to be louder and it's always going to make you feel anxious and hot and dizzy and, you know, all the churning your stomach and all those kind of things. Accepting that that is normal, and unfortunately that's just a byproduct of being human. You know, you're going to have fear. And fear is a good thing because, you know, if a bus is coming at 50 miles an hour, you want to get out of the way. So it's not a bad thing. People say, if I could just rip this machine out of my head and say, but that machine is also, you know, responsible for how creative you are and what a loving parent you are and a great friend and your, you know, your funniness and, you know, all of that stuff. It's also responsible for that. So not taking what it says as absolute fact, going, I get a choice.
Yeah.
I get a choice. It's just that I've got some interference, and acknowledging what that interference is. Another thing that I do, this'll make you laugh. If I've got something coming up that I'm really nervous about, which does happen, I do the mindset stuff first and the reframing and, you know, the evidence gathering and stuff. And everybody I've suggested to do this has gone, it really works. And you'll feel a complete idiot doing it, right? But I've got a big event, and it was the biggest stage I'd spoken on, and there was loads of people there, and I was really, really nervous. So I channel my alter ego. So I love Miley Cyrus. I just think she's absolutely brilliant. I love her songs, but I love her as well. I just love her, you know, take me or leave me attitude. So before I spoke on that stage, I was listening to her in the car and I was imagining that I was her. So when she's on stage, how she is, and she's just dead confident and she just don't give a rat's. So I was listening to her in the car and I was like geeing myself up. And then I was getting changed and like just putting my makeup on, doing my hair. I got my earphones on and I was just channeling what I call my inner Millie. This makes a massive difference to how you walk out on stage. Like, it's huge. And I've told all my clients to do this and they go, oh, I feel a bit daft. And if I, like before I do my lives, I go in my kitchen, put old Miley on, I strut around the kitchen as if I'm, you know, the video awards, you know, as if I'm some pop star. I come in, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. It's brilliant. It just changes up your energy.
It's funny because, so I do something similar. I'm not Miley Cyrus, but I do a finger tapping thing, and it's not like EFT finger tapping, but basically before any kind of presentation or event, I just stand there in the room, shut my eyes, imagine getting a massive round of applause and everybody being really happy and people asking great questions and involved. And I tap my third finger. I don't know why I'm showing you on the camera, Helen, because none of our listeners can see what I'm showing you. But I tap my third finger. And the reason I tap that is because that's quite a difficult one to tap. You don't tap it naturally. And I just shut my eyes. Yeah, ring finger. I shut my eyes and I tap my finger. And whilst holding my finger and the thumb together, I get that image really clear in my mind. And at any point in the day, if I'm starting to feel a bit rocky, start to feel a bit wobbly, I just put my hand behind my back, tap the finger, and I'm back in the room again. And it's like voodoo. It's weird how powerful it is. But I think from what you've told me, the reason it's working is because I'm bypassing that limbic system that's saying you're in danger, get out, and going, no, it's all right. Yeah, they're all right.
Yeah.
Let me just recap then to make sure I've got some of this stuff right, because we got some right proper juicy stuff here. So first of all, you've got black socks on. No, I won't go that far. So first of all, people need to think about this. We'll take a bit of time. Need to have a bit of patience to work on this kind of stuff. In terms of going to network events and talking to strange people like me, first thing to do is to investigate the stories that you're telling yourself and be clear about what it is you want. Get a bit of paper and write on that paper. And I love that idea of actually just literally physically writing it down. There's something tactile about writing it down. I am worried. What are you worried about? I'm worried that people won't talk to me. I'm worried people will think I'm an idiot. Then do a bit of detective work to say, okay, which of those are actual facts? Why do I think that? Which of those are true? What evidence is there that that is actually going to happen? And then you're seeing what you call that faulty wiring. And then get a blank sheet of paper and say, okay, what story do I want to happen? So get that written down. What do I want the outcome to be? Do I want three leads? Do I want to have great conversations? Be clear about what you want to say. Come up with a set of questions you want to ask your new story. Accept the fact that not everyone will like you, but people are more likely to like you if you are genuine and interested in them and want to find out about their top from Reese or their shoes or whatever. And just make sure that your aims are about making genuine connections and not going in and bamboozling people with your product or service. It's about building relationships and making friends. And then in terms of some sort of presentation scenario, whether it's on video or in front of people or whatever, similar sort of thing. I love this idea that it's not all about you, it's about them. And, you know, get over yourself because you don't matter, but they do. So actually, you're the vehicle for a message. What do they need? And being comfortable with the fact that you're going to help them get what they need. You will be nervous. Understand why that fear strikes. But when the fear strikes, face into it. And then we ended up with you being Miley Cyrus.
Well, what better way to end?
I love it. That is fantastic. So listen, that is a chunk of stuff. And I feel like we've only been talking for like 5 minutes. We've been chatting for ages. So if people want to get a bit more of Helen Walker and find out a bit more about you and how you can help them or just see what you're about, tell us all about your social media, where people can find you, where they can see your stuff.
The best place is Instagram. If you search This is Helen Walker, you can't miss me because I'll be I'll be wearing a wig, or I'll have a prop, or I'll be doing something crazy on a video. So it's quite standout stuff, so you can't miss me. But I do talk a lot about, you know, how to make more sales using video, how to make more sales generally. It's all about storytelling. It's all about relationship building. So everything I teach, it's all aimed at business owners, but it's applicable to every area of your life. Because 90% of what we're talking about is mindset and the stuff that we've covered today. So Instagram is the best. This is Helen Walker.
Okay. And you're on LinkedIn and Facebook and all those others as well,
I'm on LinkedIn, yeah, Helen Walker, Facebook, Helen Walker. There's a lot of Helen Walkers, though.
Yeah.
And I've also got as well, if people want to know about what to talk about on camera, because I know that's a bit of a block. People don't always want to get on and do stuff because, like, what do I talk about? What's going to be interesting? I've got a whole visibility guide on what to talk about. So if anybody wants a copy of that, it's free. Just, you know, send me a DM on Insta and I'll send you a copy. Just put the word visibility and then I know what you're referring to.
Fantastic. Well, I'll put all those links in the show notes so people can link and connect and hook up with you. What I learned from you this morning is one of the things you can talk about is washing the dishes.
Exactly. People say, oh, I've not got time to do video. I'm like, well, just, you know, you've got time to do your washing up and your ironing. Do a video whilst you're doing that because it's relatable stuff. And the thing is, in fact, I proved this week. So I did a video and it was in my kitchen and I kept moving around my kitchen. And one bloke said, oh, the reason I kept watching is because I wanted to see the rest of your kitchen. So people are intrigued by, you know, it's like reality TV, isn't it? We like to see, you know, what's behind the curtains. So, yeah, do a household task while you're doing your videos.
Love it. Helen, thank you so much. We've covered so much stuff. Is there anything you wanted to say that we haven't talked about?
The only thing I would add is... what you've also got to remember is that other people have the same system as you. So they also have a system that's going to blow up and not be reasonable and try and protect them. And they've got a bunch of stories that, you know, are leading them or guiding them. So sometimes when people, you think, well, they're being very unreasonable or that's not how I would react. Yeah. They've probably got a load of stuff in their computers that they don't even know about.
Yeah, and that's I think it's called the spotlight effect, isn't it? That we imagine that people are paying more attention to us than they actually are. Really, they're paying attention to their own worries and their own fears and their own anxieties. And some people seem to be better at covering that up than others, but they've still got them.
Yeah.
They're still there.
So if somebody does ignore you at a networking event, it's probably because they're so consumed with, oh my God, what do I say? How do I look like I know what I'm doing? Yeah. And they've just ignored you because they're so in their own head. But you walk away going, oh God, they don't like me.
Yeah.
99% of the time, it's nothing to do with you. It's to do with them.
What a great way to end. That is fantastic. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate this. I know I normally do like some great big finish to end on, but you've done so much great big stuff in the conversation. There's nothing left. Helen, thank you ever so much.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been brilliant.